I had sent her a message on Instagram and said, I have a big gay problem. And she completely perked up and said, my favorite kind. I can't wait to talk.
Welcome back to Recovering From Everything, a podcast for everyone who has ever had anything happen to them ever. Happy Pride Month, buddies. I love this month. Everything feels so joyful. There's parades everywhere. There's people who have otherwise been marginalized for many, 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 many years in many, many ways. They get to come out and be free and have fun and love each other in public. And ideally, no one can say fucking shit. But we know that's not the case. People still say shit. People still think it's okay to say shit to me. And I'm not okay with it. Someone said something to me today, and I literally put up my hand and said, stop. Anyways, I love Pride Month. In honor of Pride Month, I decided to interview my old friend. Her name is Sarah. She's really cool. Her story's really cool. I don't want to give anything away yet because you just kind of have to hear this story for yourself. The way that Sarah thinks is very big, and the way that she articulates her big thoughts is very beautiful. And she has this vibe where she is absorbing and adding little puzzle pieces to her identity. And I find that very relatable. And I love finding people like that. So I hope you enjoy this interview. The story, I think, is unique. It's unique in my little hetero bubble, but maybe it's not unique to everybody. Let's just get started. Here we go.
Hi, Lovey.
Hi, honey.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are you? So nice to hear your voice.
I know you do. Mm. I love you so goddamn much. And I think this whole conversation and interview will be like me walking a fine line between curiosity on like a friend level, yep, but then helpful curiosity for the purpose of the show.
Yep. That sounds beautiful.
So who are you? How old are you? Where do you live?
So my name is Sarah Phillips. Who am I is a long answer.
I know.
I'm a woman who mostly lives in Toronto, though I'm living in New York for the next month or so. I'm almost 38. I'll be 38 end of August. I work in advertising. I'm also a writer. I'm a daughter, a friend, a queer woman, and someone who has a big appetite.
Ooh, which is really funny because you were like, I'm going to be late. I need to eat a snack.
Exactly.
Happy Pride Month.
Thank you. Yeah.
My beautiful queer friend.
Yeah.
So I remember like 2 years ago, if not longer, you had reposted on your story this photographer who had taken your picture. And I clicked on it and I went to her original post, and the caption was that she was taking photos of queer women. And I was like, huh, Sarah's using the queer label. Mm-hmm. Was that like a public coming out for you?
Oh, it absolutely was. The process itself was like a year or so in the making getting to that, and is still a process, and I guess always will be. But yeah, that definitely was okay, I guess we're going to tell people this now.
That must have been scary.
It was, but the timing felt right. I mean, like, my close friends knew what I had been going through. You know, it was a weird time to go. I mean, I don't know that there's ever not a weird time to kind of go through process of transformation. But for me, this was happening during the pandemic. And so there was a lot of sort of isolation, a lot of sort of weird thoughts and experiences. Like I felt like there was a life that I was starting to live in a really quiet way. And as much as I had, you know, come out to my family, I had come out to friends, it felt, I don't know, we all live these like semi-public lives on Instagram. And so, you know, my extended sort of people around me, I was like, how do you do this? And my friend Tara, who's just a beautiful person and a stylist, is in the process of launching a business where she's a personal shopper and redoing closets for anyone, but primarily for queer folks, and figuring out sort of like, how do you get your clothes to match sort of who you're becoming? And she asked if she could do it for me. And I thought, okay, well, if you're going to do this to promote your business and your website, maybe this is a tool that I use as well.
Yeah. You know, what's creepy is I already creeped her Instagram profile.
Oh, that's not creepy. That's just life in 2023.
Okay. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, what a niche market. I thought that was such a cool idea. And like, I am a woman that appreciates androgyny. I always have. Like, I love that so much. And you, Sarah, have the coolest style ever. And is that something that took, that was like developed for you over the last 3 years? Or was that like your personal style? Was that the way that you've sort of been for a long time?
Well, my, so like style and clothes and fashion and all of that has been like my, it feels almost like it's my birthright in a lot of ways. My grandmother, for instance, on my mother's side, she taught me how to shop. She taught me how to find a bargain. And she always looked incredible. She passed away a little over a year ago, I think. And, you know, even when she was at home during the pandemic, she had, like she was sick. She was still putting on her makeup, getting her hair done, getting like wearing beautiful clothes. It was just like a part of who she was and how she felt good being in the world. You know, my mother as well is someone who just like loves fashion and clothes. And so that's been like a huge part of just how I've been brought up. But you know, the difference between, I can recount so many arguments that I've gotten in over the years with my grandmother and my mother about like what a well-dressed woman is. You know, my grandmother always used to talk about like putting outfits together. My mom is a very feminine woman, and I loved clothes, but I didn't love the way they wanted to put me in clothes. Mm-hmm. And so coming out has made like some of those sartorial choices that I've made in the past like make more sense. Like and more playful. Like I have long hair, I present as like very femme. But I play around now. Like if I'm dressing in something that's like more feminine, I'm aware that I'm kind of like playing with that gender dynamic and having fun with it. You know, dressing for like the female gaze instead of the male gaze, like completely changes all of that, at least in my head. And then playing around with like wearing more masculine clothes also feels really powerful. It's like put more power for me on both sides of the spectrum. Whereas in the past, when I put on like a really sort of like typically like a pretty outfit, I felt uncomfortable. I felt icky. Yeah. Now I can find like a sense of like fun and independence in that.
Totally. Especially like I relate to that so much, especially the part of feeling more powerful in like more masculine clothing. Like feeling powerful is important to me, and it's really strange the way that it can manifest itself for me, but dressing more masculine 100% makes that come out in me.
Yeah.
And even dressing for the female gaze and the male gaze. I mean, I'm a, you know, hetero cis woman, but I love dressing for women. Like when I go out with my girlfriends, it's the outfits, it's the hair. It's like, I'm super feminine. When I'm hanging out with my boyfriend, I'm just like, ugh, like what, like, what do you need from me right now? Like, fuck off, you know?
It's so much more fun to dress for women than men.
Oh my God, 1,000,000%. So it's surprising to me. You mentioned that you're about to be 38, which A, blows my mind because I can't believe we're so old. But it's still, for some reason, surprising to me when people like in our ripe old age come out, or when, you know, people come out even later in life. But it also makes perfect sense to me because I think you and I are kind of the last generation that was subjected to, you know, the 90s, where it was like acceptable to be homophobic, which is so fucking gross to me. And always has been, but okay. But I feel like the younger generation seems so much more tapped into like who they are. So for your case, do you think that you were repressing this part of yourself or unaware of it or something else?
That's a question that I asked myself a lot as I was first going through this, and it caused, you know, a lot of soul searching. And, you know, I think the answer to that question will probably change over time as I continue to find the language for it. But I think what makes sense to me is this idea of fluidity is something I'm really attracted to as a word to explain sort of what I've been through and what's possible, I think, for a lot of people. You know, I think that when I think about the time in which we grew up, the 90s and the early 2000s, what we understood as gay or lesbian fit into like this really narrow definition. And
yeah,
to even go back to like clothes and appearance as like a huge part of this. You know, there, it was, if you were a lesbian, you were butch. Like that yeah. That was the energy that sort of, that was the definition of what lesbian sort of looked like back in the day. I remember watching Chasing Amy, and there's a scene in that where they talk about sort of lipstick lesbians. And so this right. idea that like, if you're femme and you're attracted to women, there's sort of this like surfaceness to it. Like it's not actually taken seriously because you're still feminine. And so this idea of like having any sort of model around me that would maybe reflect the kind of person that I was, that just didn't exist. And, you know, it's really hard, or for me, I find it really challenging to imagine myself into a place where I don't have any template for it. I'm trying to get better at that. But certainly in the past, there wasn't anyone who looked like me. There also wasn't much of a grayscale. Like you were either gay or you were a lesbian or you were straight. And the story was that you were repressed if you were gay or lesbian, and you kind of like knew it. And I had this moment where I realized that like you could be in the closet without knowing that you were in the closet. I thought that was like a conscious thing. And so I don't necessarily feel like I was repressed so much as I feel like there was just such a narrow definition, and heterosexuality was like the only way to be.
Yeah.
And so the world wasn't expansive enough for me to see that there were different ways for me to define myself and different experiences for me to have.
That makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. It's like, so now are you getting a better sense of who you are because there's so much more variety?
I'm a person, I love thinking through things through like multiple perspectives. My parents split up when I was really young, and they didn't co-parent very well. And so I kind of grew up in this space where there were like two views of the world that I held as true at the same time. And I love that I kind of live in a space now that allows for like multiple truths to exist.
Yeah.
And it's changed everything for me. Like it's not just about my sexuality. It means that I'm more open to different ways of making a living. I'm more open to different ways of spending a day. I'm more open to different ways of like finding purpose. And, you know, I don't want to pretend like this is some like eureka moment and like everything is so rosy and amazing, but like,
I know.
I definitely like, I'm seeing the world in more expansive ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, that feels really right to me and to sort of who I am and to like how I want to move through this life.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It's so relatable, Sarah. Oh my God. So do you know that there are support groups specifically for coming out later in life? Do you know this? I Googled it. There's like an abundance. There's even podcasts. There's one called Graying Rainbows, which is the best title I've ever heard for anything in my life. Did you feel and do you still feel supported the way that you need by your loved ones?
I could cry answering this question and thinking back on the support that I have received and continue to receive. Like my community of friends is like, it's the best group of people in the entire world. You know, I think a lot of my friends are straight. Like I said, like being, when you're in one place for most of your life, yes, you gain new people, but you also kind of hold on to those of the past because you're still close to each other. And so, you know, two of my very oldest and best friends, my friend Robin, who I went to high school with and grew up with, my friend Michelle, who I met when I was 9 years old, like the two of them, considering that they're both straight women who kind of haven't gone through this sort of like existential question in life before. Mm-hmm. I needed them so hard, like during the pandemic, as I was going through this. And they, you know, even though they didn't have all the answers, I needed to feel like loved consistently through this. I needed to feel like going through this change wouldn't change who I was as a person and how I connect with these people. They were incredible. They were absolutely amazing. Another very old friend of mine, my friend Danielle, she actually lives here in New York. I had reached out to her at some point. She was the first person I knew to come out. She came out when we were in our early 20s. And I had sent her a message on Instagram and said, I have a big gay problem. And she completely perked up and said, my favorite kind, I can't wait to talk. And she has sort of been, because we're in different cities usually, she has been like my gay guru in my pocket, like my imaginary friend who's like with me every single day. And so providing like that perspective. And then like new people I've met, like the queer community in Toronto and everywhere, likely, I'm sure, has brought really amazing like partners in this journey, friendships, people who whether or not they have experienced the things I've experienced can truly like be there alongside and like find the fun in all of this. And then the last person that I would also mention in this is my ex. So I was with a man, Joel. I was with him for about 15 years. So like my entire adult life. And, you know, we went through this journey very much together, and painful as it was for both of us to, you know, recognize that this was moving towards a real change in the way that we are connected to each other. He was so supportive of this, even like through his own pain and his own experience in this. And like, wow.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that because I mean, until someone recently, you were married to a man. I have a question. Last year when we were all at Girl Talk, were you guys already split? So that was last April.
We were. Yeah.
I had no idea. And even like when we were messaging about both being at Girl Talk and you were like, Joel and I are so excited to see you. And I was like, this is a queer woman in a marriage to a man. I was just like, this is just how Sarah's life is. And I had no idea the impact that it might have on your marriage because I've seen you guys been together for a billion years.
Yeah, I certainly didn't know the impact this would have on my marriage until it kind of kept unfolding and like opening within me. We, you know, quite frankly, Joel and I opened our relationship. I had never been with a woman before I'd been with Joel. I was a serial monogamist and had just been with boyfriend after boyfriend after boyfriend. And really like not even a day single. And So we opened our relationship, which is a thing we've talked openly about with friends and family. And, you know, I think is a beautiful thing and a beautiful process for a lot of people. And for us, yes, it did lead to us no longer being like married to each other, but our relationship has evolved. It hasn't ended. And I love that you say that you were like, oh, Sarah's a queer woman and she's married to a man, because that's true for a lot of people. And I think that that's amazing. Like, your sexuality is not about who your partner is. It's about who you are and how you identify. And, yeah. You know, queerness exists in, like, you can queer so many things. It's why I love the word. Like, an older generation, my parents' generation, they just, like, can't wrap their head around the fact that I'm using that word, because for them it's a slur. But it's something that our generation has really, like, reclaimed as a positive and made it a really expansive, you know, label.
Yeah.
So yeah, Joel and I like continue to move through life together, but, you know, in a different way. I just think that context of sort of like husband and wife, hetero marriage, that just was a box that just like, I couldn't make it fit with where I was starting to go.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it about Joel specifically as a human that makes this evolution of your relationship possible?
Sometimes I wonder if Joel is human.
I know. He's really special. Like, he really is.
Yeah. I mean, and he's like, he's self-made. And I don't mean that in like the way people talk about like a self-made man, and that's about like success and in a financial capacity, but he's self-made in that, like, he moves through the world in a way that is just so uniquely him. And it's a mystery as to how he got there. And, you know, he comes from like a pretty kind of like conservative family, and Joel was, I think, very much the black sheep. And so it's really beautiful the way he sees the world as a place where, like, you fuck shit up and you see what's possible. And, you know, he thinks about things on a really grand scale. I'm not a huge astrology person, but I will call out that he's an Aquarius, and everything that I understand about Aquarius seems to be true about him. Like, he's obsessed with thoughts about like the universe.
Yes.
You know, like this idea that we're at this tiny speck of dust, and, you know, the things that we hold so dear every single day are just like, you know, nothing in the grand scheme of things. He sees like the magic in the world. He has wonder, and he loves me. And, you know, I think he's curious and open, and, you know, he may be a straight cis man, but his own, I think, relationship to what masculinity is a thing that he's felt challenged with in the past. And, you know, that isn't to say that there's any sort of like gender or sexuality journey that like Joel specifically is going on, but like, you can be a straight cis person. Well, you should actually, I think, be a straight cis person and challenged by these notions of what's male and what's female.
Yeah.
And he definitely is. So this idea of sort of being at odds in the world in some capacity, I think, has really been a core part of how Joel has experienced life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for the journey, like, now in hindsight, for the journey that you were about to embark on, you know, in 2020, I think it seems like Joel was the perfect person for you to be matched with because of the way that he is. Like if I'm thinking about every other, you know, hetero cis male that I know, I'm like, I couldn't pick one that would be more perfect to sort of understand what you're going through from the perspective of like a hetero man.
Truly. And yeah. I mean, that's a beautiful thing, but yeah, also such a painful thing. Like, the hardest thing I've had to move through in this process is my sense of guilt. And I still feel it all the time. This idea that because Joel is so amazing, because he, you know, could see, because he could support this, you know, and was happy to make room for it in our relationship, that I should have been able to give him something that was closer to like a version of us staying together. And, you know, doing something that you need to do, but knowing that that's going to hurt the person that you love in the world more than anyone else, knowing that, you know, you have to risk losing family, because that's really who's what someone is to you after 15 years in your life. That was the hardest thing to move through, and it still remains such a difficult thing. Like, forgiving myself for hurting him is a thing that you know, I'm working on.
That was one of my questions, is how do you forgive yourself? It's twofold. How do you forgive yourself for the pain that Joel went through and possibly still is going through? How do you forgive yourself for that? But then how do you also forgive yourself for only coming to these conclusions, you know, when you were 35?
You are asking all the right questions.
Thanks, lovey.
Yeah, truly. I mean, forgiving myself as this sort of experience has affected Joel, you know, it in practice, what that means is a lot of conversations with, you know, those friends and other people who I haven't mentioned. I have a therapist that I'm grateful and lucky enough to be able to have. And so it's a lot of being reminded by those people that I didn't really have another choice. I had a conversation with my father actually just a few weeks ago, who said, when I was sort of feeling the weight of all this, you know, once again, and he said to me, Sarah, you need to remember that if you could have stayed with Joel, you would have. You had to do this. Like, this wasn't a thing that you, and then the other thing that people say is, you know, it wouldn't have been fair to him.
Yeah.
Just today. So I do this, I've been practicing the artist way, which is a 12 week, it's a book. And then it's like a 12 week practice that's helping to sort of connect yourself to like your creative spiritual self. And one of the practices is writing 3 pages first thing in the morning. It's called Morning Pages. Oh. And actually just this morning, I was writing about this and writing about how difficult it really would have been to sort of move through what I'm going through with Joel. That it would have been kind of dragging him along, or it would have been, you know, limiting my possibility. And it's just, you know, when your perspective changes, when your whole world changes, things have to change. So reminding myself, or having people in my life remind me of those things, I guess that's how I work on forgiveness, though my forgiveness is really, really, it's not there. It's going to take some time.
And frequently too, right? Like, you almost have to do that kind of stuff day to day, because as you said, it is insidious. And like, you know, you could be out grocery shopping and suddenly you're hit with this wave of guilt where you're like, oh, don't forget, you just like ruined this person's life. And then you have to do all this work to sort of recover from this one tiny little thought.
You're oh, like, my God.
Yeah.
That is truly it. Yeah. And so, you know, I think, because these teeny tiny thoughts can really like knock me down and like ruin an entire day. I think that part is a part I'm trying to get a little better at, like this process of sort of like feeling my feelings, because I don't want to be like dishonest about the discomfort that comes up. But learning how to kind of like just try to like not let it kind of completely knock me off my feet or like ruin an entire day. You know, I've also spent time talking to Joel, honestly, about these feelings. And, you know, he encourages me to forgive myself as well. But, you know, that's also like a cycle that's hard, because then he's great and he says something great, and then I kind of feel bad all over again. So it's little stuff, and it's big stuff too. Like, I, in terms of forgiving myself, again, my world was like, rather, you know, I've just talked about fluidity and talked about, you know, all the ways that things change over time. And even though I've been like a believer and a lover of change as like a life philosophy for forever, I really felt so blindsided by this experience that at first I felt like I couldn't even trust myself. Like I couldn't trust my instincts. I was like, wow, you so don't know yourself that you could, you know, be 35-ish years old and starting to come out now. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Talking to other people who have come out later in life, and really remembering that it's not about me. Like, it's not, we live in a world where like it's the individual. And we so often forget that like, we don't live in a vacuum. We live in history. And so going back to the things that you were saying before, Kinga, about the world, the way the world looked while we were growing up in it, like it's reminding myself, like, it's not my fault that I couldn't see myself in these things. Like, you know, I had blinders on, and those blinders were put there by me, by everyone around me, by culture around me. And, you know, some of these things were insidious, and some of these things were terrible, and some of these things were just like limitations that I had and other people had. So that's, it's a lot of reminders, either internally or externally going through that. The other thing I would mention is like, I'm a huge, huge book nerd. I have a master's in literature. I'm like, in my dream life, I would have like 17 PhDs. So in my master's, I did a lot of like queer theory, and continuing to read like queer literature is amazing. It doesn't have all the answers or anything, but just seeing all the different perspectives and like just challenges, the complications, the beauty, the dirtiness of it all, like that's a thing that really helps. So just consuming queer culture in different ways is a like kind of a super important part of this for me too.
Were you consuming queer culture pre coming out or post?
Oh, fuck yes, pre. Like, I think that that's another thing. I think I was queer intellectually before it was a personal and embodied experience for me.
Yeah.
Which isn't a strange thing to say about myself, because I am in my head a lot. I am an intellectual person, and I love living in the world of ideas. And, you know, I think that exploring queerness through academia and through the art and like the movies and the books that I consumed, I think it was a way to explore this world without taking on the risk of realizing it.
Right. Oh my God, that's so interesting to me. Okay, I have an anecdote that I have to share with you specifically in this episode, because it's so cool to me, but I don't know who else would understand it and in what other episode I could possibly use this anecdote, but I love it. So I also am a woman of divorce. And so in literally the summer before I decided to end my marriage, my ex-husband, who was huge into punk, introduced me to this band, Against Me. I had never liked punk in my life, but for some reason, I really started to like Against Me. And my ex-husband tells me, says the lead singer just came out as trans. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's so great. Yay. So as I start listening to more and more of their songs, all these tracks are about being really uncomfortable in your life and being trapped in this life that you had created, as the lead singer, who is also writing the lyrics, is really struggling with his gender identity. So I start hearing these lyrics, and I'm like, it honestly started as like whispers, where I was like, fuck, this idea of overhauling your life, completely dismantling it, make the massive change that you know you need to make. These whispers became like screams, and honestly, sometimes literally, because it's like a pretty aggressive punk band. So sometimes it was like, it was screaming at me, and it was this one band that literally pushed me over the edge to make this massive change in my life. So I started listening to Against Me in like maybe June or July. I started hearing the lyrics, and by the end of August, I was like, listen, this marriage needs to end. Mm. And now, I mean, the lead singer made the change, and she's now Laura Jane Grace. But that is how a trans person caused my divorce. And it's so beautiful. Like, it's just so beautiful to me because the idea of transformation, and I'm a Scorpio and we love nothing more than a death and rebirth. And I experienced multiple deaths and rebirths through the course of the year. But the idea of transformation, like for me, it was like a whisper. Oh, guess what? You can't fucking deny it anymore. Guess what? Now I'm screaming in your ears. Is that relatable for you?
So relatable. Like in a speechless sort of way.
Yay. I knew you would get it.
Yeah, majorly. It, oh man. And a lot of resistance in there too. Like that's maybe one thing that, yes, I would add is that when it's whispering to you, it's not just about that process of change, but it's also about the resistance you're putting up against it. Like the more you resist, I think the louder it starts to get. And I was resisting, you know, not because I was like, oh my God, if I come out, my family and friends are going to hate me and leave me. I'm lucky enough once again to like be accepted on that front, when a lot of people, you know, still aren't. But I was like, I don't want to do this because I don't want to overhaul my whole life. Like, yeah. I'm not like, you know, terribly unhappy. It's just that I'm learning that like, fuck, this is really not fitting me anymore. Yeah. And I'm resisting it because I don't want to hurt the person that I love. And yeah, the screams became really loud. Really loud. And yeah, I was a really difficult part when it was sort of like screaming at me. I love that you have like a specific song like that. Yes. And I really love the sentence, a trans person made me end my marriage.
Yeah.
I love that. But yeah, for me, it was a deep battle for myself. Yeah. That is 100% what that process of transformation felt like for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, like looking back now, the resistance of it is the most painful part. You know, 1A is resisting it is so fucking uncomfortable, but you can do it. And then 1B is like, but if I do take a step in this direction, think of the pain that I'm going to cause this person that's been in my life for so long. And that, you know, there's one person that's going to be like me overhauling my life means they have to overhaul their lives too. And that's like, fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It's so much responsibility. And I would have truly done anything to not,
yeah,
have to do that. But yeah, you can't resist at a certain point.
Do you feel like you have to make up for lost time?
Oh, certainly. Though I'm trying to cool that because it's exhausting.
Yeah, I bet. Like I imagine there is a sense of like, you know, foot on the gas pedal, like let's go.
There was for a little while, and I'm just realizing that that's not sustainable, and it's also, yeah, not who I am. You know, like I think I'm pretty even on the introvert extrovert side of things, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I get energized by like being out and being around people and being on the move, but I also, you know, I need quiet, I need space, I need like, I need both sides of those things. And so I'm familiar with the feeling of burnout in work for sure over the years, yeah, but now in this experience as well. And, you know, I have a really shitty relationship with the concept of time, meaning that I hate the passage of time. I love that it's father time and that time is like a patriarchal concept, because it's like truly, truly one of the most frustrating things, I think, that I battle all the time, whether that's about getting somewhere on time or, you know, the time that we move through things in our life. And so, you know, one of the things I've talked about a lot with my friends is
this idea of a second adolescence, and I didn't make it up myself. I read it in this really beautiful article that was written in New York Times Magazine. One of the writers there was talking about coming out later in life and also learning how to swim later in life. I have absolutely gone through a second adolescence, had those feelings of, you know, rebellion, just wanting to like be destructive, the feeling of like, you know, being nervous and uncertain and not sure who you are. And, you know, even sort of the sweaty palmedness of like, you know, talking to someone you like I'd never been on a dating app when Joel and I separated, let alone dating women for my first time. Like I truly felt like I was like a 14-year-old boy with all of the like raging hormones to go along with it.
Right.
So, you know, I think this idea of a second adolescence has really resonated with me. And I've come to love the idea of being in my adolescence in my 30s. I think the being in your 30s is a great time to be an adolescent. Like, you know, if you're lucky, you've established a little bit of your life, you have some like financial security or independence, you know, you're not living under your parents' roof, you know, so, and you have freedom and you have a little bit more wisdom. And so I was like a pretty responsible teenager, and I'm learning how to like embrace risk and accept uncertainty and do all the things that I think a lot of people do in their like late teens and early 20s. I'm just doing it in my 30s. And so accepting that like also the timeline of life is bullshit, that being in your adolescence in your 30s, that's just the way it goes for some people, I guess. There's real world implications for that. And like a lot of things I would like asterisk or caveat to that around like my financial capabilities, where I was born in the world, like the color of my skin, mm-hmm. I had a family who loved me, like a million things make that easier for me. Not to mention, again, like the time in history that we are in, like my mother was a woman who was divorced, but she had children and she didn't have a career when it happened. Like life was completely different for her, women of her generation, for yeah. our generation. Like the world has just changed so much. So I'm trying not to look at it as lost time, but look at it as just being my time and kind of trying to let go of those definitions of what time, what certain years, what a day even is kind of supposed to look like.
Oh, I love that so much. That was helpful for me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You've said so many good things. Like this conversation that you and I just had just went above and beyond anything I could have expected, but then it's also you. And I think like, I understand your brain. So this is also very mm-hmm. on par for Sarah's brain. I'm going to wrap it up. You've given us so, so much wisdom. This was scheduled to be my last question. If you could give advice to someone questioning their sexuality, their orientation, their gender, their the current state of their life, I guess might be a better way to put it. What would you say in like a quick sentence, like a little kernel soundbite?
Fuck.
That's the soundbite.
That's it. That's the soundbite. Yeah. Fuck. Maybe I would just say, get yourself some good friends.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Get yourself some good friends.
That's a really good one.
When you bring someone into that experience, even if it's someone who's not having that same, like it doesn't have to be someone who's having that same experience as you.
Yeah.
You just need to not do it alone. And so I just hope anyone who's going through any sort of transformation, whatever it may be, has some friends to do that with or finds a way to get them.
Yeah.
It's my hope. Maybe not my advice. It's my hope.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Kinga.
This was the best.
Oh my gosh. I loved this.
Yeah, thank you so freaking much. I know you're in New York, so I was just like, oh, fuck, like, if I can squeeze you into a Pride Month episode, that would be so good, because I love your story so much. And I also love that I sort of like discovered that you and Joel had split. Do you remember that? Like through your Instagram stories? And I was like, not me finding out about all of this. Like my ex-girlfriend and my ex-husband. I was like, my ex-girlfriend, that part didn't even like surprise me. It was like that you and Joel had gotten divorced. I was like, wait, fucking pardon me.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Also, this was such a pleasure to like, I mean, obviously I know you and I know what you've like done in your life and what your talents are, but like your voice sounds so fucking good, Kinga.
Oh my God. Thank you so much.
Like so good.
It's interesting to me, maybe not remarkable, that I relate to you and your experience so much simply because of like the human experience of having like a major life transition where you have to say goodbye to life as you knew it, mm-hmm. you know, and like, I guess like any sort of like lines between, sexuality and gender and like whatever, like all of that, like they don't exist, because I'm just like, no, yeah, like we both had major transformations in our lives that are extremely painful, and you come out the other side and you're brave, and you have to be brave, and you have to deal with guilt and forgiveness and like understanding what all that means, and fuck the concept of time and like all of that. And I'm just like, I hope that's what people get out of this, is like it doesn't matter that I just interviewed a queer woman, like if you've ever had a transformation in your life, like you'll be able to understand like everything that Sarah's talking about.
That means a lot to hear that, because you know, if I ever get out of my own way, I want to write about this. And to me, yeah. It's not like, it's a queer story, but it's not just for queer people. And I think also, again, because my experience has been one of like, I conceptualized myself as straight because that's all I thought there was. And yeah. then, you know, kind of became queer and understood that that was actually where I fit. The idea of like writing a queer story that's just for people who already think about themselves as queer doesn't feel like enough for me. Like I want hetero people. I want cis people to be like, oh, like there's nuance in my life too. So that's really nice to hear. I got to get over my imposter syndrome and write.
Oh my God, I could do a whole freaking other episode on imposter syndrome. I know.
It's the work. It's evil.
Yeah. It's so heavy. Like it's so heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. I love you. Enjoy the rest of the month in New York. That's my favorite city in the whole world. I'll be there in August.
Oh, good.
Yeah. For the anniversary of hip hop.
Ooh, fun.
I know. Yeah, enjoy your time and absorb and keep adding to the puzzle pieces of your life and your person. And I love you, and I'll talk to you soon.
I love you too. Thank you, honey. Thank you for thinking of me.
Thank you.
Guys, there's one question that I forgot to ask Sarah, and I'm embarrassed, honestly, that I forgot to ask her and that we didn't discuss it, but, you know, maybe there will be a part two about that. The question I forgot to ask her is, does she feel safe? That's an important question. That's my privilege showing the fact that I didn't even think to ask her that question. There's not a lot of hate. There's not a lot of violence. There's not a lot of discrimination against heterosexuals. There isn't. And that is my privilege. And the fact that it didn't even occur to me to ask Sarah whether she feels safe as a queer woman is my privilege showing. And I want to read you a little bit of our conversation from earlier today, which made me realize that this was a very important question that I forgot to ask. So Sarah said that she is in New York. New York does Pride really, really well. And she messaged me that she was feeling a bit nervous about our discussion about how our generation was likely the last generation to feel iffy about coming out. And she said that's been ringing in her head, and that someone had just told her that there's people planning to show up to the New York City Pride Parade and pull some shit. She also mentioned that there are a few brands that are pulling Pride inventory off the shelves because they're being boycotted, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I totally see where you're coming from. Let me look into that one topic on the recording and see if anything needs to be cut, because we don't want to make light of the fact that politics and what I want to say are outdated ways of thinking, even though they're still somewhat currently existing in 2023 in a big way. I just didn't want to come off as insensitive, even though my privilege during our conversation and preparing for the conversation made me insensitive to the fact that Sarah might not feel as safe as she did when she was walking through life as a hetero. Sarah says, it definitely is easier for a lot of people, and the next generation seems more open in a lot of ways, but society around them is still quite fucked up. I said, I totally, totally hear you. Good call. And she said, the two things can be true. And I said, most of our discussion on that was about this generation being more in touch with themselves / having more robust examples rather than it being easier to come out. I said, does that provide any relief? And she said, it does, for sure. She said, maybe it helps to think internal / external. Like, despite there still being a lot of politics around sexuality and gender, many people younger than us seem more comfortable with themselves. And she says, and politics remain, but a lot has changed. I said, can I include this part of the combo as a tail end closer? This is the reality right now, being free and afraid at the same time. She said, absolutely yes. That's it. That's all. Pretty cool, right? Pretty freaking cool. I really, really was interested in Sarah's recovery process from this completely life-altering, I want to call it a decision, but it's not. It's so much more than that. From this completely life-altering puzzle piece, maybe is a more accurate way of looking at that. Because there is a lot of things that go into dismantling and rebuilding major parts of your life. And there is a lot of forgiveness and there is a lot of guilt. And it's like a constant cycle between those two for like a while. But there is also a lot of joy to be had. And I love Sarah's idea of a second adolescence, because as absolutely horrific as my adolescence was, I think with the wisdom of my beautiful 39-year-old brain, I could tackle another adolescence. I could do it. I mean, I kind of did. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that story. Go check on your queer friends. Ask them if they feel safe. Ask them if they feel happy. And also, Google the word queer, because I'm pretty sure it no longer means what you think it means. That's it, buddies. Have a good week. Love you.